I can't come here and die. I can't come here and live. Got all this shit on my mind. Like, what the fuck am I doing? Work ain't paid me in time. My boo just ripped me my mood. O2 just cut off my line.
This is a trigger warning. This episode at times contains conversations and sensitive material that people may find difficult to listen to.
Hi guys.
And welcome to the Echo Chamber.
I'm Jade.
And I'm Ez.
We're coming to the conversation a little late because we've been on a break, but we're going to chat about Chimamanda 3-part letter and just the wider context, the transphobia, the consensus that she is transphobic. We're going to chat about that still. Opening question, how was your week?
It's been really strange in the sense that I have had, I've just been really, like, I've had a lot, like, my to-do list has been really long, and that has been difficult. Everything's got done, but it's just felt there's a constant pressure to do things. So that's been challenging. I had a funeral yesterday, and one of my good friend's younger brother, who passed away some months ago, was finally buried yesterday. And it was so indescribably beautiful. And I feel so blessed to have been there and been a part of it and witnessed it. And it was a lot, though, as well. So, like, yeah, it's been, my week's been weird in the sense that, like, everything's got done. It's been quite productive, actually, despite having quite heavy things. But yeah, there's also that, like, kind of difficulty of that grief, and just the weight of it, like, the weight of, like, yeah, man, the weight of the pain. And yeah, I've been really clear how important community is this week. The funeral was so beautiful, like, so beautiful in the midst of, like, how difficult it has been. It was just very, very beautiful. And I think a lot of that was down to the way that people, like, banded together to support the family. Yeah, so it's been one of them weeks, like, a lot on, but very grateful in the midst of it. How was yours?
I really hear you. Really strange week. I got up on Tuesday feeling bare dizzy. I have never felt like that in my life before. So I woke up on Tuesday feeling really dizzy, got through my day, and my Tuesdays are usually, like, not, bears not going on. So they're a bit slower and easier. I managed to get through the day. And then Wednesday, I was like, nah, I can't do this. So I had phoned NHS 111 on the Tuesday evening anyway. Then my doctor called me on the Wednesday and I went there to get seen and whatever. But I say all of this to say, it was so debilitating and it has made me think so much about my health, that something as seemingly simple as dizziness, like, how debilitating, like, I couldn't do anything. Even when my doctor was like, okay, you can come in and get seen. They wanted to examine my ear because, of course, like, it's all connected. She asked me to come in within the next half an hour. And I was just like, I can't do that. Like, I couldn't, like, rush, basically. I had to really think about how I was traveling to the doctor's surgery. It was really mad, really, really mad. It's been mad. I'm still a little bit dizzy, but the medication that I was given has just been very, very, very helpful. So I'm grateful for that. But yeah, that was a bit crazy. And then this week has been, a lot's been going on. And of course, it probably feels like it feels more because of the fact that I'm a bit fragile at the moment. But I actually nearly forgot a meeting yesterday. I did forget it. One of my agents messaged me. It just kind of dawned on me, like, I need to slow down. Like, I actually, and not slow down like, oh, like, so, you know, just take it easy. No, I actually need less plates to be spinning, basically, now. I need to, like, create an exit plan for certain things in my life right now. That was kind of something that's been heavy on my mind this week, that I actually need to create an exit strategy for a few things that are, yeah, a few of the plates that I keep spinning. But other than that, I'm good. I'm trying to really get back on my exercise and eating theme, like proper, which is just feeling a little bit difficult right now. Exercising isn't feeling, well, it is difficult because of this fucking busyness, but it's the eating that's like the thorn in my side. It's just like, it's just fucking hard. And it's so like emotions are so central to eating, and I see it so clearly in myself. But yeah,
it's interesting you mentioned the like correlation with like your health and what that's got you thinking about the plate spinning and needing to slow down, because I am in the middle of having the psoriasis breakout. It's all over my, it's like my scalp is, I've always got psoriasis in my scalp. It's like, it's especially bad at the moment. And also I had the runs like throughout the whole funeral. Like I woke up with runs and was just like, my body was just like release whatever it needed to release. And it just got me thinking about how I feel like externally I'm getting so much better at managing stress. So this has been a really stressful week, but that's not, and I don't, and I think there would be a point in time where this would be like, I'd be out, like I wouldn't be, yeah, I'd be like completely out or completely having to like numb myself to survive or whatever. And it's not been that, I've been like, it's been calm in it, it's been all right. But my body is reacting in the ways that my body isn't reacting. Which is so, just because it feels like I'm juggling things well or things like are moving forwards, quote unquote, I guess like the body keeps the score. So as Jade mentioned before, we thought we would have this conversation. We are a bit late to the party because we've been on a break, but it's something that popped up whilst we were on a break that I had lots of thoughts and feelings towards and thought, oh, this would be really good to podcast about or to have a conversation on this platform about. However, I want to kind of start by making it really clear that this is a topic, gender identity is a topic that I am not, I've got a long way to go. I've got a lot of learning to do in relation to this topic, in relation to transphobia and what that is and how that plays out and manifests in like real time. I've got a long way to go. Yeah, just learning. I've got a lot of learning to do in relation to this. So I want to start it with that. And to apologise in advance for any clumsiness. I anticipate clumsiness because of my positioning, because of my privilege in relation to this conversation. I anticipate clumsiness. Just want to make it very clear that my intent is never to cause harm. I want to be able to have this conversation freely, thoughtfully, but freely, but also know that in doing that, I anticipate that there will be clumsiness. I speak often about fly on the wall conversations behind closed doors when nobody's listening. What are the types of things that people say or would say? For a long time, the conversation about gender identity has been one from me has been one that has been a bit of a fly on the wall conversation. So one where actually my positioning or my posturing behind closed doors hasn't been maybe as confident or as clear as I've thought to be publicly. And I just want to kind of integrate. I just want to kind of like be a bit more honest with myself and open about this conversation. So yeah, so long caveat. Long caveat there, but I think it's important.
You often caveat that you speak for yourself and not for me, but I want to piggyback off on to what a lot of what you've just said there, particularly identifying with. I very much acknowledge how much I don't know and my privilege. It's so interesting. I'm thinking about so many things, but I think that in our friendship, we talk a lot about the men that we have around us, that the men that we engage with and interact with, and some of their politics. And I think that we're at a place in some respects where there are certain men that we just couldn't date because of some of their views and some of their maybe resistance to like changing their views or educating themselves so that they can, change some of their views or just be educated and whatever. And I'm just sitting here thinking about the amount of not only like maybe people that I would entertain or would engage romantically, but also even just that friends that I have in my life that spew certain views about the queer conversation and queer, I use the word, the term queer to encompass LGBTQIA plus community, even though I would be the person to challenge or question or ask or educate if I feel I've got the tools to, when it comes to the very specific trans conversation, I don't recoil at the man that says dumb things or the things that I can't even identify as dumb, because again, my education doesn't go very far. Do you know what I mean? So I'm just thinking about that, and I feel confronted as we're chatting about this thing, as I've read this Chimamanda thing, as I've read a critical piece in response to Chimamanda's three-part letter, I feel confronted now with like that, you know? But yeah,
if it is interesting. I think privilege is a very interesting thing. And I think it's something I've been grappling with quite a bit this year, in my time in Nigeria and Ghana, but also just that generally, just been thinking about where I hold privilege, where I hold power, social power as well. So not like, yeah, where I am privileged or seem to be privileged in society. And what that means and how that manifests and how uncomfortable I am with it and how I don't really know what to do with it, because I've always positioned myself or been placed in positions where I am deemed or seen to be quote unquote underprivileged. So it's interesting what I do and the flip side of it, where it's like, actually, when you're on this side of the fence, what do you do? Who are you? What does that mean? But yeah, just for context, so Chimamanda has been accused of being transphobic based on an interview that she did in 2017, where she was asked about trans women. And in the interview, her response is, the interviewer asked something along the lines of, like, are trans women women? And she has responded saying trans women are trans women. The back of that in 2017, there has been like ongoing kind of like conversations about her being transphobic. I want to start by saying that that is one incident of a few. So I can't say I know much, but I know that there has been like times where she has co-signed J.K. Rowling or like done other things that would feed into this narrative or this idea that she's transphobic. And so she put out a three-part letter addressing two, like she, and in that letter she speaks about, or in that blog she speaks about two people, one who's a non-binary person, one who is a queer woman, essentially directly addressing how they've engaged with her name publicly in relation to her being transphobic. And she's quite like harsh, I would say, and condemning of like their criticisms of her in relation to her views on trans identity. Yeah. And that her blog has been like quite controversial for different reasons, kind of seen, and that Twitter is my barometer for a lot of things. So my Twitter timeline has shown that quite polarized stances from quite a polarized stance from people that usually would like have the same views. So that my Twitter timeline is most definitely an echo chamber. So it's most definitely like people that tend to think like me, and have certain, yeah, think like me across the board on most things. But what I saw online off the back of this letter was like polarized opinions from people that usually, I think, yeah, where usually there wouldn't be a lot of division. And I found that quite interesting. Yeah. I found it quite interesting.
Yeah, so I'm not engaged in social media beyond the Echo Chamber Twitter account. And unlike yourself, as I think that it was more pro-Chimamanda, what I saw when the three-part letter came out. I want to say that Chimamanda is probably, she's top three writers for me. I'm a massive fan. And so that probably definitely impacts, yeah, it definitely impacts my capacity to be like fair in what I have to say about her, in my criticism of her. If I were to level criticism, I think it would taint my ability to do that because of how much of a fan of her writing I've been for such a long time. The three-part letter, I think that Chimamanda has a way with her writing style and her words. She is a thorough writer. I think having engaged with Chimamanda's writing for maybe the last 15 years, which is like half of my life, basically, I have a tendency to believe that Chimamanda has gone through not only a process of like really thinking this thing through rigorously before she has even put pen to paper or started typing on her keyboard, but also even just the way that she delivers things, that this is truth, this is gospel, this is like, this doesn't need to be touched, this doesn't need to be criticized, because she is so thorough and comprehensive. And I've always loved that about her. She has the clarity and a pristineness in the way that she writes. But I think that that also, for me, coming to the conversation as somebody who has not done the educating, I can admit when it comes to the very specific trans conversation, it meant that I arrived at her letter feeling like, yeah, she's not transphobic, was kind of just my positioning after just reading it, do you know what I mean? And not, again, doing the educating or reading any critique, because of course the critiques came after, or the reading of the critiques came after.
Yeah, so going back to what I was saying about grappling with privilege, it's interesting because I think I definitely have a similar positioning to you in terms of that, my reverence for Chimamanda as a writer. And then it goes deeper to her being an Igbo writer, an Igbo feminist writer, and all of these like different ways that I see myself and I identify, like I can identify myself her and like the connections between us with what makes me love her so much beyond her, like pen game is like the best. Even thinking about the way that she structures sentences and says things with such a violent clarity, and that's on any topic she chooses to write about. So there's that reference that is just there, and then there's that connection, me seeing myself in her, me seeing the connection between our stories and yada yada yada. And I think that that places me in a similar, my disposition or my natural kind of like instinct is to feel defensive of her. Based on those similarities or my reference for her and the fact that I like her. And then there's something that I've been thinking a lot about, or I think a lot about, or I think often about, is this idea of like putting our gods on trial. So like placing people that we kind of have put in positions of like authority in our lives, and this is across the board, but people that we reverence, like let's put them on trial. Why, like let that be like, why are they deserving of the positions that we've placed them in? And I do think that on this trans conversation, I have been really challenged by my reaction. So I'd like, not to talk about if she's transphobic, not transphobic, yada yada yada, all of that is like another conversation. But what I've been looking at and what I've been really challenged by is my reaction, my defensiveness, my clumsiness, my resistance to challenge my privilege in this way. So even as you were just talking there, and again, that like I started by saying that I definitely feel like I'm coming into this conversation from a similar place to you. So not saying that we're miles apart or that I, yeah, but I'm coming into it from a similar place. So as you were talking, I was thinking, you're saying that you haven't done the reading or the research on this specific thing. You've got opinions on it, and we're coming on this one to talk about it. So in my mind, I am like, we should both shut up, read, and not have this conversation publicly because of the potential for it to cause harm, that's where my brain went automatically. And I think about that, two white women coming on a platform to be like, oh, we've not really read about the blacks. However, this is where we, this is our stance on this or that. You're just going to, my stance is just shut up then. Do you know what I mean? Just shut up. Shut up and talk about things that you know. That's my kind of natural inclination. And then that challenges me further because it's like, actually, I do think it's important to be able to have brave conversations, courageous conversations. Even when you, like, I think that actually part of my, for me, as part of my processing is that being able to discuss, debate, talk about. And to be clear, there's not a debate on people's humanity. So there's not debating, but in terms of like this specific Chimamanda conversation and this cancel culture, because it's also turned into a, the blog that Chimamanda put out was referencing or was more addressing cancel culture and the ways in which we engage with people on the internet particularly. So I'm like, it's just techie, basically. The whole thing is just techie. I engaged with her 2017 interview when it came out around those times. And I did not personally see what was wrong in her saying that trans women are trans women. Reason being, so existing as a minoritized woman, existing as a black woman, I have always navigated the world in a way where there are different categories to womanhood. So I don't think I fit in what is considered, like when people talk about womanhood on a mainstream platform, I as have not felt included in that conversation. Hence why like womanism or black feminism or whatever, I don't even use either of those labels, but I never openly refer to myself as a feminist, for example, because that movement doesn't feel like it applies to me or was built for me or by people like me. I don't think I'm considered in what is championed as mainstream women. So the idea that there are categories to womanhood, so being a black woman, to me, being a trans woman, being a black woman, being a minoritized woman in whatever way, I think has always felt normal to me, for want of a better term. So there is that. I do think that like I would love to be in small spaces where I could understand more about the experience of trans womanhood and that existing in the world as a trans person and that struggle and what that is. So I think that there is a bit of a dissonance in my brain because I think a lot of my understanding of transhood, if that's a term, but a lot of my understanding is really cerebral and really theoretical. And I think I have actually done a fair bit of that reading and in my work, I've engaged a lot with I talk about identity a lot, but like I think I have attempted to begin to educate myself on what it means to be trans and what that means and how to be an ally. I have attempted to do that. I definitely could do a lot better. However, I think that like still a lot of my understanding of is still quite theoretical and so can feel insincere. It can feel like I am, like fundamentally, I believe that everybody should be able to exist in the world as they are, to be who they are and to have the freedom and respect afforded to them as a human being. And that's my fundamental belief. And that looks different in different cases. However, when I say it looks different, what I mean is there are areas that I'm more passionate about. So I am more passionate, for example, about the idea about like blackness than I am about disability. And that's again my positioning in the world. And that's as a woman who is considered to be disabled. But still like there are quote unquote struggles that I'm more aligned with, know more about, have more of a personal stake in. even though overall I want everybody to exist as they are. And I see that all of those things are interlinked. So I see that actually, like, all of the ways in which, like, people, you can't, like I just said, I identify, or I'm labelled disabled and Black and lots of different other labels. And you can't chop me up. So it's not that, oh yeah, I'm 1/10 disabled, but I am 3/4 Black. You can't, so that the human experience is layered and complex. However, her original comment that kind of led to people saying that she's transphobic, I didn't feel like it was engaged with enough nuance. So there's that. I don't know enough about what she's gone on to like say. I know that like a lot of my friends that are anti or that believe that she's transphobic have kind of spoken about her open backing of JK Rowling. And again, interesting, because I don't feel an attachment to people calling JK Rowling a transphobe or a TERF or whatever. I don't feel as defensive of JK Rowling. And that made me question myself again. That it's like, oh, because somebody's like you've got the time and space to kind of research and understand. But when the people saying that JK Rowling is a TERF, oh, okay, she's probably a TERF then. That's kind of like, there's not really, do you know what I mean? I've not had to go and do big science experiment. It's like, oh, the people that are saying that JK Rowling's a TERF, okay, I don't feel the need. That is true. It's like, do you know what I mean? I've not, as like, and that again is interesting, and it shows my privilege and my ability to kind of pick and choose which part of the struggle I want to accept openly. And there's just so much in it. There's just so much to this conversation. However, the truth is, her original comment to me, I didn't feel the need to cancel her. And I felt that actually what then did happen, and I'm very anti-cancel culture across the board. So that is like for anything and anyone, like I'm very anti-cancel culture. I think it's very silly. I think, don't get me wrong, I think that not engaging with someone for your own, boundaries, to not engage with, like, if for example if I choose to not engage with a racist online or a like whatever, do you know what I mean, or a homophobic person or whatever, if I choose to not engage with those people for my own boundaries, my own care and protection of myself, that's within my rights. But I wouldn't push for that person to be cancelled, because it's like, so then to what end? Like, because people don't, that where is the bridge between stupidity and like where the bridge of grace that leads people into knowledge and understanding of like difference and yada yada yada. So it's interesting and it's very, 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 very layered.
So similar to you, I've seen tidbits of the JK Rowling stuff across social media and I've never even taken my finger to click and even look. I don't care. I don't care, and not that I don't care that she is a transphobe, but I literally, as you said, it's like, oh she's a transphobe, okay, like, yeah, okay, and I've gone on about my day when it's, you know, gotten its splash, gotten its time, gotten light on social media. And I've not questioned it, I've not challenged it, I've not felt like I needed to chat about it. It's not been a call to arms in the way that the Chimamanda one is, and not a call to arms to defend or anything, but just even just to look at myself, look in the mirror, have new considerations, remind myself that you've got a lot of reading to do. Like, the JK Rowling thing has never made me think that. It's just, oh yeah, okay, that's what she's on. So I'm with you 101% on that one, which is interesting and definitely is in part speaks to Chimamanda being one of my favorite writers and also her being a Black woman, and just I think that commonality, like the multitude of commonalities that I see between me and Chimamanda is probably why. And I guess me seeing myself in her in some ways, because of all of those commonalities. Do you know what I mean? There's nothing that I feel like I really have in common with JK Rowling, to be very honest with you. But there's way more that I will see that I have in common between me and Chimamanda. And maybe that is what the, maybe that's what it is, foundationally. So Chimamanda's comments from 2017 is really funny, because I felt as though I was reading Chimamanda's three-part letter, and it was almost like I was re-reminded that Chimamanda is heralded as a feminist, like one of the feminists of our time. She's going to go down in history as one of the feminists of our time. And it was almost like, oh yeah, like she's not just this author. She's not just the author of Half of a Yellow Sun and Purple Hibiscus, which were the first pieces of Nigerian literature that I ever engaged with. She isn't just this author of Americana, which I lent to Geraldine. Like she's way more than just like this author that I have always enjoyed, and more that I've enjoyed for so much of my life. She is actually, you know, she's a figure, she's a real figure, and it goes beyond her being an author. She is an authority when it comes to feminism the world over. And I was really reminded of that when I read the three-part letter. And so I 1,000,001% understand the standard to which she's being held and how much of a responsibility she had to make sure that what she was saying, she had educated herself and was sure of what she was saying. So I think that it is far less forgivable for Chimamanda to say something publicly, particularly on a platform like Channel 4, which I believe it was, and then for there to be a like coming back on oneself and having to be educated. I see why there's less grace given or afforded for the Chimamanda because of your positioning and the space that you take up, versus a me, or I don't know, I can't think off the top of my head right now of somebody whose ting is different, who, let's say Naomi Campbell, for example, who is a model that will go down in history as one of the greatest supermodels of an era. If she says something about the trans community or about trans women being trans women, I think that there ought to be, more than for Chimamanda, there ought to be a grace or an understanding or an openness to her education, there being a lax in her education of that matter. And yeah, so I think that is the place that I got to, kind of like trying to scrape away all of my, like my propensity to like want to defend Chimamanda. So in terms of like criticism and just telling the truth, it's true. Chimamanda, you should know better of all people when it comes to this conversation. And I say that in terms of, let's say Chimamanda in weeks, months, years to come, comes back and is like, I shouldn't have said that, or I apologize, or that's not my belief or whatever. I just understand that there ought to be less grace basically for her.
Yeah, I agree with you in the sense that I think that she definitely had the responsibility based on her positioning and how much she benefits from being heralded as this feminist. Do you know what I mean? There's material benefits that she receives and taking up that position. So I think that, yeah, there's a responsibility to know what you're saying. But again, like from my position, I consider her to be someone who's really careful with her words. And what I have seen her say on this topic, and this might be my blind spots, but what I have seen her say is not where I feel, I personally feel conflicted about in relation to her. Where I feel conflicted is that if you have actively been criticized for being something. So like the original interview, I can see why she said what she said. I can see why, I can also see why it's received how it's received, but I think that there just needs to be more space for that conversation to be had. However, I think as the years have gone on, to not actively address it, to not actively address these criticisms of you, and then to be seen to be aligning yourself with other famous people that are considered to be transphobic, there's an arrogance, and there is something about that, that is the thing that makes me feel challenged by your positioning, and makes me question, are you transphobic? Or are you unable to, do you lack a level of humility in relation to this conversation that you should have as somebody in a position of privilege? So those are the things, that's what I question. That's what makes me feel uncomfortable more than anything I have seen her say. Because actually everything that I have seen her say on the topic, whenever it's sent to me, that every time, and over the years, there's been like a few things that have like been said or whatever, it's like, it'll be sent to me and then I'll engage with it. And I just don't receive it in the way that it's being presented to me. But again, to acknowledge that that might just be my privilege. I also think that, Jade, you mentioned this before we jumped on the recording, but I think that there are two conversations being had here. So there's a conversation about transphobia, which is an important conversation, but not one that I feel in a position to lead a conversation about publicly. So I'm not going to have that conversation here. The conversation that I want to have here is about cancel culture in relation to identity, but specifically gender identity, because this is what this specific thing's about. That conversation of like, how and where do people who don't identify as trans, how and where do some of the questions and queries or ideas that I have, I'll speak for myself, that I have, like, where are the space to kind of explore that stuff? One. Two, so like this Chimamanda thing, when it came out, it was really interesting seeing like the online, there were a group of people that, like, again, really love and respect, that were like, this is transphobia, like this is that, and the fact that it's been printed in Pride Month, and like, this is ridiculous, that she's completely, that she's a monster, basically. So there was that side. And then there was like other people, again, love and respect, that were like, she's come and she's whatever. I was really confronted by that on a personal level. I was really confronted by it. And I think I tend to be very confronted by like binary ideas anyway. So like, she's good or she's bad, she's right or she's wrong, I'm on the agree or disagree. Like I tend to be really confronted by like that generally. But then I think more than like, I think there was also something about, it felt like we were having two different conversations, and it also felt like people that had kind of hidden underlying transphobic ideologies were now coming out of the woodwork, were now empowered to speak, and that made me uncomfortable. So even if I, because I loved it, like, I just thought, nah, this woman, like, it's mad. And like, she's just rude. She's just got no respect, in the sense that, like, so, and again, this is a very like Nigerian Igbo, and I'm reading it as a Nigerian Igbo woman reading another Nigerian Igbo woman's words. And I know that my process is, she's held this for years. She's thought, you small people, you think you're gonna look for me? What? I'm going to squash you. You can't even write like me, so you're not even like, I'm just gonna squash you, and like, that is gonna be it. And so that level of like violence and warfare, I respect it as a woman that understands war myself and understands like how to move in those circumstances where you feel offended or attacked or whatever. I think that she has come back and that we've got to do it, this is the way to do it. And I can express, I'm expressing that, but I also don't want to align myself with some of the rhetoric, which I was seeing, and I'd be a liar to be that I wasn't seeing it become empowering for people that may have transphobic views or may not want to check, may not be humble enough to like just check themselves in relation to their privilege in this conversation. And that was very confronting for me, because even up until now, I don't know if I'm just like, I'm able to be comfortable. I'm able to herald her brilliance because of my privilege, because I don't know, like, but actually, to be fair, me being me, I do think if like a white racist man could write like that and was saying things, I think I would still be able to see, rah, like, you can write, bro. Like, you're mad, but you can write. So I think, and so then there's that complication of like, that's easy to say though, isn't it? And do you know what I mean? That like, there's just, it's just complicated, because it's not, because I don't belong to the trans community, it's complicated knowing what to say, where to say it, if I should say it, if like, yeah, it's very complicated. And I just want to kind of try and remove some of that complexity. I want to be able to have conversations about things that may not directly impact my community. My aim and my hope to be to learn more and like connect and understand more as well. But also like, I think it's okay to have opinions on things that don't directly impact you, as long as you're open to listening to people that are from those communities and flexible with hearing what they're saying. So yeah, it's layered.
You said so many things. So similar to you, as I read the three-part letter, I also felt, just like you said, I felt like there were two different conversations. So I feel like one conversation is about the transphobia. And interesting that you said is that you felt like it was arrogant that she's essentially ignored it for all these years, for 4 years. You've ignored the backlash of being, you know, called transphobic. And from the, let's say, the less vitriolic sections of the trans community, you've completely, you know, not acknowledged that. And that, you know, being an act of arrogance. And I really hear that. Yeah, I really, really hear that. But I did feel a strong sense that, like, she has a right. So the critique that I read, I felt like what the author essentially was saying, like, was that Chimamanda ought to talk about the transphobia thing. Instead, you have derailed this conversation and decided to talk about cancel culture instead. I felt like there were two different conversations, and I felt like she has the right to talk about whatever one she wants. I am of the opinion that she should address the transphobia stuff. It's very interesting because in her notes on grief, she talks about some of the things that she took from her dad and how forming they were. So she talks about like not being scared of men and getting that from her dad. She also talks about, she talks very, very like fondly about admitting when she doesn't know and learning that from her dad from a very young age, from her teenage years. And I thought about that when I read the three-parter, because I felt like, or I wondered to myself, and as we're having this conversation now, I wondered to myself even more so, would she be able to put aside this arrogance that we're calling it to admit that there are things that you don't know? So yeah, that was very interesting, or that is like some considerations that I had. I find what your last comment, the thing is, you've even made me forget about all the things that I want to say because of the last comment that you made, is, which is about people that are not from particular communities having opinions and saying their opinions. And I find myself really getting really angry, actually, when, so I don't even necessarily, I feel like I have more space for white people having comments and things to say, or opinions, sorry, on the black stuff. So on the race thing, I think I have more space for white people to say what they think, have opinions, engage in dialogue for them. I think I've even got some space for them to still try and tell me that I'm wrong. I think I've got some space for it. Maybe I've accepted their madness. I don't know what it is. But the one that I don't have space for is the gay conversation and people putting their mouth, having an opinion. The thing that grinds my gears is the whole, I'm allowed to have an opinion. I don't agree with that lifestyle. I'm allowed to not agree with it. Oh, I don't care, but I don't agree with it. I believe it's wrong. That I have like no space for that. I have like zero space for it. I think you as a straight person, shut up. It's homophobia. It is like out and out homophobia, that opinion. And you like try and wrap it in like, whether it's your Christianity, whatever religion it is, or you try and wrap it in like, essentially what you said, like, I'm allowed to have an opinion. And I can't see past that it's homophobia, basically. So that's just really interesting. I find that really interesting about myself. I don't have the space for people to have an opinion when you're not only not part of that community, but you also don't make the effort to educate yourself and you don't make the space. So I found myself in conversations actually with these people because I shut it down. But in one of the places that I work in, I am like the youngest person in the team. And there are a lot of people that are like, you know, parents, somewhat middle-aged, blah, 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 blah. Lots of different backgrounds, ethnic backgrounds and religious backgrounds as well. I think that because they, you know, kind of probably labeled me as young, quote unquote, woke, quote unquote, activist, whatever, they try and engage conversations about like, oh, at school, they're trying to teach my child about, or my niece or my nephew or whatever, about homosexuality and this sort of stuff. And, you know, they I don't know why they're doing that. They shouldn't do that. I'm going to write a letter. I'm going to da 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 da. And I find myself just not engaging with the conversation or just actually stating my boundaries about having those conversations and saying what I think or what I think that they should go away and think about. More than anything, I state what I think that they should go away and think about. And that is, you know, I think you should challenge yourself with your thoughts around your own homophobia. Can you truly say that you are not homophobic with the things that you're saying? And also, you know, think about what harm is done and, you know, teaching children in school about different relationships and blah, 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 blah. Say all of that to say, I don't allow the space for these conversations. And I think that it is harmful. And I find that that there is like a wall between me, what I'm saying, the gentle challenge that I present to these people and them and where they're at. I find that there's like a thick brick wall there and that you can't hear me. You can't see beyond yourself. You can't see beyond your homophobia. And so that's why I'm really resistant to, people having opinions, saying them. And maybe these people are actually going beyond having opinions, but no, it's their opinion. I don't know. But then we get into a conversation. It's a slippery slope into, okay, so like, does there then need to be a set level of books that you've read or discourse that you've read on a particular matter before you're allowed to have a public opinion on it? Like, so I hear it, but yeah, in my personal life, I really lack the space and the patience for certain conversation, for certain opinions on certain matters when people are not part of that community and or just don't have an openness to admitting that they lack education or nuance in their thinking. And I say this as like, I would describe myself as a cisgender straight woman, but yeah.
Basically, you can't have an opinion on someone's sexuality. Do you know what I mean? Like you can't, it's like saying, oh, I have an opinion on you being black, whether or not you're black or whether or not it's good or bad that you're black. Like, it's just dumb. Do you know what I mean? So that's, I think, yeah, you can't have an opinion. Well, you can. you can, and people do have an opinion on people's sexuality. That, that you're dumb. That's that, you're just dumb, which is fine. Some people are dumb. And I think that, like, there's also an air of, like, just arrogance. There's just an arrogance in, like, that because you exist in the world in a certain way and someone else exists in the world in a different way, you have the right to have an opinion on, like, it's just dumb. It's just dumb. So that's neither here nor there. I guess what, when I've mentioned having an opinion thing, it was more specifically in relation to this conversation. So is Chimamanda transphobic? Or is, if she is transphobic, should she be cancelled? So those, that I think having conversations, having opinions around that stuff, I think I can hear. Like, having an opinion on identity is, yeah, I think that there's a difference there.
No, I think obviously it goes wider than having an opinion on someone's identity, no matter what we're talking about. So I think even in the conversation of, you know, should children be taught about homosexuality in primary school, like, that isn't just an opinion on someone's identity, but they're having an opinion without, I think my central point is, you're forming an opinion no matter what the conversation is, the very, very dumb opinion on someone's sexuality, or something like, you know, teaching in primary school, but you're forming an opinion and you're not facing your own you're not facing your homophobia, you're not facing the fact that you are homophobic, you're not, and you're quite resistant to engaging in the discourse and being teachable. And yeah, I think that that is applicable holistically, basically. But another thing that I wanted to, touch on, sorry, was the cancel culture thing. And, like, basically the third part of her letter where she levels, like, vitriol at the younger generation and this this conception of what we now, like, identify as cancel culture. So I found myself in agreement with a lot of what she had to say on both topics. So about the younger generation, me being sitting very comfortably there in the generation that she's talking about, and cancel culture. And when I say sitting comfortably in the generation she's talking about, I don't mean that I'm necessarily on what a lot of people in my generation are probably on, but I'm of that age group. If Chimamanda was to just see me, if she was to see me, even see the people that I follow, see some of the things that I read, she will probably lump me in, do you know what I mean, to that group of people that she was gunning in the third part of her letter. But I agreed with a lot of the things that she was saying, you know. I really agreed with Bev, the things that she was saying. I think that there is a sick kind of performance that is done in the online space that is very, very specific and tapped and lacks nuance, but swears that it is nuance. So it's like it swears that it's not binary, but it is. Yeah, I think that there's sick things going on in the online space, and it is allowed to, like, continue to reproduce itself in all of the different conversations that are being had. So I think even, like, I see bits of it in the race conversation, I see parts of it in the gender one, in the queer one. Like, yeah, I think it's happening across the board. I think that it spoils the crux of what the overarching, like, umbrella, quote unquote, cause is, which is, like, humanity, like, the acknowledgement of these people's humanity. All at the same time, I think that cancel culture, and I would be lying if I said that I don't I have not been pro-cancel certain people. So I think that the R. Kelly stuff is a perfect example of like where I can't see past wanting to cancel him or being pro-cancel R. Kelly, being warmed by the way that people have kept the energy. So playing R. Kelly at a party, people just be looking now. Or yeah, like we don't play R. Kelly's music. That's actually a thing now in our generation. And it's come across the pond to here where R. Kelly was not like the prolific abuser that he was, you know, over in America. But I found myself pro that. So, but I also understand the place that comes from, and it's somewhat emotional, and it touches on sensitivities that are really specific to me. And that comes from an emotional place. So I'm not pretending that it's logical. And so maybe that's why I wouldn't necessarily publicly ride on a bun R. Kelly. It's very private. It's very like, you know, it's a very private kind of acknowledgement of the warmth that I feel at the cancelling of R. Kelly, basically. But yeah, generally, I do think that cancel culture doesn't make space for not only for me to see the truth of who somebody is. I think it doesn't make space for people's authenticity, which is really important to me and is important in sifting and sorting who I want to engage with, who I want to learn from, who I may want in my life, et cetera, et cetera. I think it tries to like mold people into there's like a ready-made mold of who you're supposed to be, and you learn all of who you're supposed to be, all of the views you're supposed to have, and then you present as this inauthentic person or version of yourself to the world to be right on the right side of history. And that robs me of the ability or capacity to make an informed judgment on actually if I rate you, if I like you, if I want you, if I can learn from you. So I'm anti it on that front. And I'm also anti it because nobody learns anything, essentially. Like, you don't learn anything. It's just so interesting because I talk about this in my book. I talk about this in the Keisha Diskette book, where I talk about like wanting to be on the right side of things. And so that meant like fucking off Keisha Diskette for over 10 years, like not wanting to be associated with it because I wanted to be on the right side of things. And it's a very special stupidity and tactness. But yeah.
And I think that like, I just don't find it helpful. So what I don't find helpful is the word culture attached to it. So I think that like I said earlier, if for personal care and or if your personal boundaries mean that you don't engage with certain people, and if there are multiple people who choose to not engage with the same person, then that's cool. Like, that is what it is, do you know what I mean? However, I think this idea that like if somebody holds opposing views to you, or if somebody says things that you don't like, or believes things that you don't like, or believes things that are harmful to you or could be harmful to you, everybody should now stop engaging with that person. I find it lazy, and I find it to what end is kind of like my questioning around that as an ideology. And I think Chimamanda speaks to that fantastically in the third part of her. I think what she's saying, so this idea of like, I think she ends it with saying something about angels out-angeling each other. Actually, what people are, so there's a real genuine danger that like people not parroting mainstream discourse or people having opposing ideas to what is seen to be progressive, left-wing, socialist ideas, people sitting outside of that, it's real kind of like, there's a real consequence to that, you know, like people coming out and saying things that, and I think, don't get twisted, there's fine lines, because I think there should be consequence to people like being dumb or people saying harmful, hurtful things, or people causing harm, particularly if that's the intent, or if there's a lack of care or thought that's gone into people's, what people say and do. But then equally, I also think that, like, that's, it should be personal choice, and not like, oh, because you haven't cancelled someone, like, you're not on our, you're not on the right side of, like, you're not on the right team. I just think that those binaries are really, I feel really challenged by and really resistant to those binaries. I think something that's been coming up for me in this conversation has been like positioning, where you say things and why. And I've been, so as we're talking, I'm like, why are we having this conversation on this platform? Is what I'm thinking. Like, why are we choosing? Why did I think it was a good idea to have this conversation on this form? Because I'm so aware of, like, one, there is a lack of, like, confidence that I have to talk about trans issues publicly. So there's, like, so starting, there's a lack of confidence. That's impacting how I'm speaking. So it's, like, I'm thinking more, I'm more cautious, is the right term there? Or and there's, like, there's a uncomfortableness that I have, which I feel challenged by, because I'm not used to speaking on things that make me uncomfortable in this way. And that, again, that's my own stuff that I need to then understand. Do you know what I mean? That's my own stuff that I need to do behind closed doors. But then I think there's also the reason why I think it is a good idea to have this conversation on this platform is because I don't think that that is abnormal. I don't think that that is, like, I think that actually there's likely to be people that feel similar or think similarly in relation to the trans conversation. And although I'm not seeking to lead anyone or to start any kind of, like, ally learning group or anything like that, my hope is that by having this conversation in this way, it will publicly, it will encourage people to just think a little bit about what they think, how they can be a better ally, how they can, like, hopefully some of the stuff that I'm saying that I want to do, like, what responsibility as existing in the world as a cisgendered person, what responsibility do you have to our trans brothers and sisters, our trans people, non-binary people, like, what responsibility do you have to these people that exist in the world, to make the world, more bearable for them. Yeah, I guess that's why I think it might be, it's uncomfortable, but I think it might, my hope is that people will gain something in that regard. I think that there's a wider conversation about Chimamanda, part which I want to park, because actually that's neither here nor there, whether or not this one person is transphobic or not transphobic or whatever. But I think that what it does do is it speaks to, like, how we approach and how we address issues. What I've described as arrogance, I think, is an irresponsible use of privilege. So I don't know if I could sit and comfortably or confidently be like, I think she's transphobic, because I don't think I do, based on the context I have for her and the ways in which I've read into the things that I've seen. I wouldn't describe that as transphobic, and I'm open to being wrong on that. I'm being challenged on that. However, what I will say is that her inability to humbly address these criticisms is an irresponsible use of privilege. And I think it's really important that when we have privilege, we use it responsibly, caringly, in ways that create unity and connection. So there's that. But then I also want to acknowledge that existing in the world as she does, on her multiple intersections, I can also understand her defensiveness and her, so it's complicated. But I do think we've got a responsibility to start thinking beyond our own underprivilegedness, quote unquote. Like, I think it's like, yeah, so it's not enough to say, oh, I exist in the world as a black woman, a black disabled woman, a black queer woman, whatever, I see the world in these ways, and that's hard, and I navigate a lot of challenges, like, which is what it is. I think we still have a responsibility to do the work, to look at us and look at where we can be causing harm and perpetuating hate.
I hear you on the difficulty that you, or the challenge in navigating this conversation. And so initially, I think I did feel like, okay, yeah, it's true that, why are we having this conversation? But I think that we have addressed, for the people that exist where we exist, I think that we have had an interesting conversation. I think that we've addressed things beyond the Chimamanda transphobia conversation as well, which is still relevant, basically. It's still got a level of relevance. Yeah, I don't think that you've come across as being that unconfident or being like as challenged as you've expressed being in the conversation either, by the way. But yeah, man, I definitely come away from this just even more hyper aware of how much reading I need to do.
Yeah, and beyond reading for me, like, immersing myself in community, man, like immersing myself in community, because I think I've done a fair bit of reading over the years after I built a relationship. I'll call it a friendship, but it isn't even really a friendship. It's more, I don't really know how to describe my relationship with this person. Because they've been just extremely important in my journey of understanding trans identity. And they're a non-binary person. And I just, yeah, I think they're dope. And off the back of meeting them, I tried to do all the like reading and that, and understanding it. And kind of like got a level of understanding, but actually I think there's something about like immersing ourselves in communities where difference is celebrated, and that the shifts that have come from me in that.
Yeah, thank you guys for listening, and we'll catch you in the next one.
Thanks for listening, guys.
I can't come here and die. I can't come here and lose. Got all this shit on my mind. Like, what the fuck am I doing? Work ain't paid me in time. My bae just ripped me my mood. O2 just cut off my line.